2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
I'm Callison Stratton, a singer-songwriter, public historian, and host of Liberation Station here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Liberation Station is a show that highlights the work of female and femme-presenting performers across genre and time. It's my little way of balancing the scales of representation on the radio. Join me for Liberation Station every Saturday evening at 7 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Radio Catskill, keeping Pennsylvania voters connected this election season. October 21st is the last day to register before the November general election in Pennsylvania. October 29th is the last day to apply for a mail-in or civilian absentee ballot, and the Pennsylvania County Board of Elections must receive mail-in absentee ballots by 8 p.m. on Election Day. November 5th is Election Day. Pennsylvania polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Radio Catskill, keeping you connected this election season.
This is Radio Catskill, WJFF Jeffersonville. Listen local.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. You know, every once in a while, I speak to people who are going to be on my show and a theme emerges. My guest today, Jean Colgett of Damascus, Pennsylvania, and my guest next week, Doug Ray from Narrowsburg, New York, brought to mind for me the theme of perseverance. Jean, who grew up in Pittsburgh, was always a runner. She began to play soccer at age 8, and the thing she loved about it was the running. She's run a marathon, a half marathon, and a triathlon, although she admits she didn't love the biking. She is, as she explained, the type of person who has to work out every day. But then Jean had to give up running due to problems with her hip. We're about to hear how she persevered and what she's into now. So let's get to it. Welcome to Catskill Character, Jean.
Thank you for having me, Donna.
I'm so happy that you're here today. And the first thing I want to talk to you about is Pittsburgh. I love Pittsburgh. Don't ask me why. I've never even been there. But it just holds a fascination for me. And I'd love if you might give us a quick tutorial about Pittsburgh.
Oh, sure. I would love to. Well, I'll start by saying that I've met Mr. Rogers twice in person. He is also a Pittsburgh native. And I even back all the way back to college, a long time ago now, people would always say, oh, you're from Pittsburgh? I'm so sorry. And I always say, oh, but no, you don't understand. It's so beautiful. And I grew up in the suburbs, but I went to a private school within the actual city of Pittsburgh. So in the mid to late 70s, my mom would drive me the 45 minutes every day to school. And we would pass, you know, the famous Three Rivers. We would pass the Monongahela River, and all of the steel mills at that time were still just belching out smoke, and you could see the glow of the fire. They were working 24/7. So we would pass that every day, and it would be really smoggy and the smoke would be really thick. And then the industry dried up. I mean, it seemed like it was almost overnight. Of course it wasn't, but all of the steel mills shutting down in the Rust Belt. So, you know, Pittsburgh and Ohio, all along the rivers, and the city was really depressed in the early 80s and has just gone through this transformation. And you have the universities, which have always been there, Carnegie Mellon, Chatham, University of Pittsburgh, and the teaching hospitals. So those, I think, really the healthcare industry and the hospitals and the universities were the backbone. I think this, I don't know what would have happened to the city if they hadn't been there. And now it's just, I was just back in August for my mom's 80th birthday, and walking through what used to be just the warehouses, the loading docks for all the food and their condos. And, you know, it's similar to what's happened in other cities, but condos and restaurants and parts of the city are unrecognizable, and parts that were used to be dangerous are not anymore. But there's always been such a strong sense of pride in the city and also pride among each and every ethnic group there. I mean, there's still a neighborhood called Polish Hill, and you know, you have Shadyside and Squirrel Hill and Mount Washington, and just a lot of flavor and the nicest, nicest people you will ever meet. Kind of a funny accent, not the most flattering, but just great salt of the earth people.
Oh my God. So I am totally correct in my feelings about Pittsburgh.
You are. And you have to go to the Andy Warhol Museum.
Yes.
It's in an old music building where I used to have recitals as a kid, but it's just, all the museums are fabulous and there's so much to do there.
Oh, well, thank you so much for that, Jean. I really appreciate it. Now, in the introduction today, I gave a very brief description of your athletic life, and we're going to dive into that. But before we do, let's hear about being an only child, growing up with parents who were academics, and they really leaned into that, into excellence. What kind of an impact did that have on you?
Well, you know, being an only child, people would always ask me, oh, don't you wish you had brothers and sisters? And ever since I was a small child, I would always kind of look at them and say, well, I don't know what that's like, so I can't answer that question. It's not as though I had them and they were taken away. I've just never had siblings. And I would always say that my parents are my siblings, because I probably, in some ways, for as much academic pressure as they put on me in other ways, I was allowed to speak my mind and probably was generally pretty obnoxious to them. But I had so much leeway with what I said and what I did and kind of my creative side. So in that respect, I would always tell people we fight like siblings. But yes, on the academic side, particularly my mom, she taught at a Pittsburgh city school, gifted and talented English. So whatever she was doing in her classroom, if my teachers weren't doing that for me, guess what? I had a whole other curriculum that, in addition to the work that I was doing in my high school, I would be doing the work that my mom wanted me to do too. And that included memorizing the prepositions and reading the books that her kids are reading and going to Shakespeare plays, and all of which was for the better and probably made me appreciate education, but at the time just felt like torture. I think I felt like I was the only kid who was having extra SAT tutoring on Saturday nights. So yeah, there was a lot of pressure, but we laughed a lot too.
Well, that's great. And I think it's safe to say that from that experience, you became what you would consider a hard charger. You went to William and Mary for your undergraduate work, and then you went on to get an MBA from the University of Maryland. You worked in banking after school, and you're still the senior director of finance and operations at Hudson River Park Friends. I'd love to hear about that organization.
Oh, it's great. So Hudson River Park itself is 550 acres, and it runs from, for people familiar with New York City, from Chambers Street in the south up to 59th Street, basically to the Intrepid on the northern side. And there is some amount of government funding and government money that is allocated to the park, but I work for the fundraising arm of the park. So we raise money from individuals and corporations, and when I first started using Hudson River Park, I think in 2000, it was brand new. It was a local woman's dream to transform all the piers along the west side from, you know, they had taken down the elevated highway there, and there were just these crumbling piers. And it was her dream to turn them into what's now Little Island and Pier 57 and Chelsea Piers and all these amazing things and activities for people to do in green spaces. And so in 2000, I would jog there every day and just probably like everybody else thought, oh, it's a city park. I'm so lucky. It's right in my backyard. And it wasn't until probably 15 years later, I was invited to the gala by a friend who was on the board and realized that there's this whole world and whole organization who manages and cares for and loves the park. And so it would just seem like a natural fit for me. When I left banking, I really wanted to eventually land in the nonprofit world in a senior finance role. But I was pretty sure that I only wanted to work 4 days a week so that I could have Friday through Sunday up here, so to speak. At the time I was living in Narrowsburg. And lo and behold, this fell into my lap. My friend who's on the board was still on the board and said, oh, they're looking for a new CFO. And my boss said, well, it's Monday to Thursday. And if you want, it can be full time. So it's perfect. I work with a wonderful group of people, and I would encourage anyone who happens to be on the West Side, take a stroll through the park and just enjoy what it has to offer.
That is so fantastic. This job seems running in Hudson River Park. And I know you've run a marathon. What's that like? And how do you train for that?
Well, I think like anything, I used to be a much more rigid rule following person. So of course, at that point, internet wasn't something that was a tool we used every day. So I got a running magazine and I found a running instructions basically on how to train and just followed that recipe. And I guess the farthest one is supposed to run before a marathon is around 18 miles. So I did that. And it was the DC Marine Corps Marathon. So parts of it are pretty desolate. You're not in neighborhoods. You're just kind of out on these piers or kind of outposts in the city, and there nobody's cheering for you, and people were just dropping off into the grass. So, but then you kind of come around the bend and you wind up at the Iwo Jima Memorial, and my running partner at the time, and I said, whatever you do, we're running together. And he said, well, I run a lot faster than you do, and it makes my knees hurt to keep your pace, but I'll try. And I said, well, I will kill you if you, I ignored it. And in my 20s, I just dismissed all the doctors who said that I'm just not built for running. Wound up, fast forward, having rule for suspension, that still didn't work. So that finally the pain just made me have to give it up. I couldn't do it pain-free anymore. I had to stop and walk, and it was no fun.
So sometimes persevering is a really good thing. And then other times, it could actually be detrimental to you because you could make things worse. It's fruitless, in other words. You really didn't want to give up running, did you?
Oh, no. There was nothing mile run on the weekend. And yeah, did not want to give it up.
Yeah. Did you go through any kind of denial or depression just at the thought of having to stop doing this thing that you've been doing since you were a child?
Oh, for sure. Well, I mean, I think the denial started at the first sign of any kind of pain or the doctor saying I shouldn't run anymore. And the denial continued for 20 years.
So, oh, no.
Definitely.
Were you trying like acupuncture and all other kinds of medicine besides Western medicine?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Went to a former Olympic running champion in New York City, Dr. Phil Shinnick. And he was an acupuncturist and also an artist with these crazy visions he would get. And he would keep me in his office for like 2 hours showing me his artwork after the acupuncture. But yeah, I tried.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, I don't want to leave the listener hanging, but I think we'll take a quick break here, Jean. Okay.
Okay.
You've been listening to Jean Kogut, my guest on Catskill Character today. I'm Donna Fellenberg. This is Radio Catskill, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jeff, your host on Radio Catskill's show, Electric Mountain. I'll be playing a choice selection of house, techno, electro, and a whole lot more. And every week, I'll feature a guest DJ spinning a continuous set, bringing their unique style. Come dance with us on Electric Mountain each and every Saturday night, 12 to 2, exclusively done on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
If it's happening here, it's on Radio Catskill. Local events, local voices. Live local conversations 5 days a week. Radio Catskill, weekday mornings at 10.
Can two people with different political beliefs still have a meaningful conversation? I'm Ronald Kelson, and I'm working with Radio Catskill on StoryCorps' One Small Step, bringing strangers and our community together, one conversation at a time. We are having conversations in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania all year long, and you should be a part of it. Sign up now at wjffradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. If you've just tuned in, my guest today is Jean Coggett of Damascus, Pennsylvania. In the first half of the show, Jean told us a bit about her hometown, Pittsburgh. We talked about how driven she is in everything she does, especially running, which she began to do in earnest when she played soccer starting at age 8. She told us about training for a marathon and how she responded when her hip began to give her so much trouble that she couldn't run. And we spoke a bit about perseverance, the pros and the cons. In the second half of the show, Jean is going to share how her perseverance paid off and she found a new athletic pursuit. Jean, you really went through it trying to find a way to keep running. What was it that finally made you decide to focus elsewhere? I think you said in the first half that it was just too painful. Am I right?
Definitely. And as part of training for triathlons, I did a few, and I could swim to save my life. But in terms of swimming competitively or swimming for any length of time, I didn't know how to do that. So I had a coach at Chelsea Piers and really learned how to swim, how to breathe. I definitely liked that. So having the combination of the running, biking, swimming was something that I could pull out from the three of those that I liked and I knew I'd be able to do even with a wonky hip.
Now, let's not forget the story you told me about a relative of yours who was also a runner and had to stop running.
Yes. When I heard the story at the time, I dismissed it completely, and then it came back to mean a lot to me. But it was my aunt's sister-in-law, Mary, was always a huge runner, and the family always talked about her and the races she was doing. And at a certain point, I was probably in high school and was at a family function and heard that Mary was not allowed to run anymore. She just physically couldn't, and she was devastated, and she took up swimming. And in my perfectionist adolescent mind, I was thinking, God, what a loser. She couldn't figure out how to run anymore. Now she's swimming. Like, I'll never do that.
That's not going to happen to me.
It's not going to happen to me. And then really maybe in the past couple of years, it popped back in my mind and I thought, oh my gosh. Part of it too was at that age, I thought, well, I'll never be as old as Mary is. So that I'll never get there. So yeah, the same thing happened to me. And I now fully understand how she threw herself into swimming as a substitute, because you can sort of get that same high while swimming.
It's so funny, isn't it, that something that you originally have a negative attitude towards, which is her giving up running and starting to swim, when you go later on in life and you have a fully formed brain, you can look at that in a completely different way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, here's another time when just knowing someone was a big influence on you. You wouldn't have discovered open water swimming if it wasn't for your friend Janice Noble.
Yes. I mean, I have Janice to thank for many, many things, especially introducing me to St. Kitts. It was 2023. Janice was going back to St. Kitts where she grew up, and she hadn't been back in 15 years. The kind of person Janice is, selfless and wanting to share joy with everyone, she invited so many people to go on this trip back to St. Kitts with her. Only two of us, I went and Val Gregoretti went. And Val and I stayed at a Marriott there. And I was just swimming one day in the pool and I was doing my laps. And two ladies were at the edge of the pool and they said, oh, are you doing the big race tomorrow? And I said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Are you? And again, judging me, I'm looking at them thinking, there's no way you guys are going to be able to swim a race like that. And they said, oh, yeah, we're doing the race tomorrow. And so I thought, OK, I want to learn more about this race because this is a beautiful place and I think I can do it. So I asked them how far it was. And they said 2.5 miles between the islands of Nevis and St. Kitts. And Val and Janice said, oh, just do it. You'll be fine. And I said, no way. This is something I need to train for. And so I trained all year. Second I got back, I kept emailing the organizer, like, do you have the date yet? Do you have the date? And trained for it. And yeah, if I hadn't gone on that trip with Janice, never would have heard about the race. And then Janice and I vowed that we were going to go back a year later, which we did. And I did the race.
Yeah, you finally swam that race in St. Kitts this past April. Tell us what it was like.
I was very nervous. I'd never done an open water swim. I very short kind of shoreline things for the triathlons. But
excuse me for one second, but I have a question about open water swim. Now, I saw that movie Naiad, and, you know, of course, she's swimming a huge distance, but they have all these precautions that they take. They have a boat with the person. She had to put all kinds of jelly on her to protect her skin. What did you have to do?
Well, it's interesting. I guess it depends on the race, but you're not allowed to wear a swim shirt or like a rash guard shirt. You're not allowed to wear a wetsuit. I mean, you can, but then you don't have a qualifying time. And the one thing that seems so obvious now is Dramamine. I had no idea that you could get seasick during a race, but you can. But yeah, there were kayaks, and it was really well organized. You're at the starting line at 6 a.m. and you don't actually start swimming until 8 o'clock. And they run through all the rules and what to look for and how to sight and what to keep your eye on so that you don't get off course. So yeah, there are a lot of safety precautions.
So you didn't have the Dramamine when you did that race?
No.
Did you get sick?
I got very seasick. You did have to have a flotation device that you attach to it goes around your waist. So for part of it, I just held on to that and kicked and stopped actually swimming for a bit. So that was helpful. But yeah, I've done a couple races since then and taken Dramamine, and it's much better. But it's the same feeling you get on a boat when you get seasick, but it's just you in the water. So yeah, was not expecting that.
Well, talk about perseverance. You had to have a tremendous amount of perseverance to continue on after feeling like that. And you did have a lot of support from people right here in the Catskills. Would you say something about Tustin Social for those who aren't aware of it? You were trying to raise money for them, right?
Yes. So Tustin Social is a relatively new nonprofit organization. And I'm the board treasurer for it. And our goal is to bring people together and form an even stronger sense of community. And based on the town of Tustin's comprehensive plan, Tustin Social and the River Reporter surveyed the community a couple of years ago for what types of activities the community wanted, and what emerged was that creative, artistic activities for kids and more social opportunities for seniors were kind of the front runners for what people wanted. And so Tustin Social organized, along with Tustin Youth Commission, an after-school youth club, and Bethel Woods came and taught different art activities. And then we also have the SAGE sessions for seniors. And those have both been going strong for well over a year now. So But where we do need the help is fundraising, so that we can expand our offering and really span all ages with our activities. And we want to make sure that what we offer is free. So I thought, well, if I'm going to do this race, why don't I use it as a way to raise money for Tustin Social? And we raised over $7,000, and it was just remarkable, the support of the community. I mean, acquaintances, people I'd met a couple times, some people I'd never met at all were reading about Tustin Social or knew about it and were, you know, throwing money at the swim and donating. So as you said, I had a lot of support, and I really wanted to, I mean, when I started to get seasick, I looked at the kayak, the rescue kayak, and I was just like, come on, Jean, you can't quit. You put this stuff all over social media for months and ask people for money. Like, you keep swimming. So it took me a very long time to get across. But I didn't think I could face everybody back home if I didn't finish the swim. So
that is amazing. So you persevered. So I understand you don't like open water swimming that much. You're not training in the Delaware, obviously. Where do you train?
I probably should be training in the Delaware. I live right on it and really have no excuse, but it's just too comfy and easy to train at Woodlock. So I belong to the fitness center at Woodlock Springs, and they have a very nice pool. You can sign up online for a lane, so you have it all to yourself. And it's a little monotonous to be swimming for two and a half hours in the pool, but they have great staff, and it's just, it's a lovely, lovely place, and it's great pool and has been really helpful for me.
And I imagine if you did try to train on the Delaware, you couldn't go out there by yourself. I mean, one of the things you hear all the time in the summer when we have all these people coming in here, wear a life jacket. We have terrible currents that you don't have any idea of until you're caught in it. So it would be a little more complicated because you just couldn't do it by yourself. Or am I making that up?
No, I think you're right. You could either wear a flotation device or my husband, we talked about it all summer and never did it, but my husband said, oh, I'll go out in the kayak with you and we can head upstream and then we can turn around and come back and just to try to get just to sort of clock how long is a mile or 2 miles in the calmer parts of the Delaware. But you're right, you shouldn't do it alone. And one of the races I did this summer was up at a lake in Vermont. And everybody had to have a dedicated kayaker. So he was with me for the entire length of the race.
Do you have any plans for any big races next summer?
I'm headed back to St. Kitts. We've already booked our Airbnb and filled it. So with open water swimmers I met through the event in St. Kitts last year, Janice and I both met a wonderful woman who is a marathon ice swimmer and has done the English Channel. She's crazy. And she's going to come and do the race in St. Kitts with us. So that is on my list for sure.
Well, I have to tell you, Jean, as someone who can barely swim across a pool, and I'm not talking lengthwise, I'm talking widthwise, I am in total awe of you. And it's been so much fun having you on today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Don. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for the opportunity.
You've been listening to Catskill Character. My guest today has been Jean Coggett of Damascus, Pennsylvania. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs. Please join us then for more stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. This is Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and I thank you so much for listening.
Calicoon Art Walk returns Sunday, October 13th, noon to 8, showcasing the growing local art and music scene in Calicoon. Over 50 local artists, live music, theater performances, film screenings, workshops, and more. Calicoon Art Walk, October 13th. Details at visitcalicoon.com. Produced by the Calicoon Business Association, made possible in part by Sullivan Catskills, Sullivan County Democrats, Seminary Hill and Meadow, and funds from the NISCA Statewide Community Regrant Program, administered by Delaware Valley Arts Alliance.
Hey, this is DJ Chucks of Old School Sessions. Please join me and Selector Starkey at our new time, 8 p.m. to 12 a.m. Saturday night.
Old school, baby. Old school, baby. Old school, baby. Old school, baby.
That's Old School Sessions right here on WJFF, 8 to midnight, Saturday night, only on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill's election coverage continues Thursday with New York's 19th congressional district debate. Republican Representative Mark Molinaro and his Democratic rival Josh Riley face off in a live debate to determine the leadership of one of the most competitive districts in the country. Listen live Thursday evening at 7 on Radio Catskill or stream it at WJFFradio.org. That's New York's 19th congressional district debate, produced as part of a regional media consortium including WAMC and WNYT News Channel 13, Albany. Thursday on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. Broadcasting from our studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. Listen local.